Welcome to your midday NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Hurricane Dorian has made landfall over Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. Torrential rain, storm surge flooding, and high winds are battering the coast before the storm brushes New England tonight and surges toward Canada this weekend.
Dorian made landfall over North Carolina at 8:35 a.m. Thursday with maximum sustained winds of 90 miles per hour, making it a Category 1 as it continues to move northeastward. Hurricane-force winds uprooted trees, triggering power outages in some areas of North Carolina, while coastal and storm surge flooding are increasing and likely to continue into Friday evening. Dorian's U.S. death toll has also increased. The latest report at 10 a.m. Friday is that four reported casualties have occurred. All four victims were securing their homes or trimming tree branches in preparation for the storm. After colliding with Massachusetts Saturday, Dorian will race toward Nova Scotia and Newfoundland this weekend as either a hurricane or an ocean storm with hurricane-force winds.
Zimbabwe's president announced on Twitter today that former president Robert Mugabe has died at the age of 95.
Mugabe died in Singapore, where officials say he had been receiving medical treatment for years. Officials often said he was being treated for a cataract, denying frequent private media reports that he had prostate cancer. The Bush War guerrilla leader who led Zimbabwe to independence in 1980 was seen as a champion of racial reconciliation when he first came to power in a nation throwing off white colonial rule. By the time he was toppled, he was viewed by many at home and abroad as a power-obsessed autocrat who unleashed death squads, rigged elections, and ruined the economy to keep control. Today he stands as a controversial figure.
He was a dictator to others. He was a hero to others, so he has done a lot for other people, but other people think he was a bad guy, so yeah, there is a different reactions to different people.
In addition to being the country's first president, he was also its first prime minister. That position effectively placed a stranglehold on the government, assuring that the parliament was less relevant and independent.
He was not so good to his people. I hope that now that he's passed on, Zimbabwe will now be able to be a country that it was supposed to be and participate in the economy as it was supposed to.
He served in government from 1980 till the end of 2017 when he was ousted by the country's army. South African embassy officials were seen at the funeral parlor after the news broke. It is unclear when Mugabe's remains will return.
U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrested 39 fugitives sought for their roles in known or suspected human rights violations. U.S. officials are saying ICE will not allow war criminals and human rights abusers to use the U.S. as a safe haven. The foreign nationals arrested during this operation all have outstanding removal orders and are subject to repatriation to their countries of origin. Of the 39 known or suspected human rights violators arrested during Operation No Safe Haven 5, ICE says 16 individuals are also criminal aliens in the U.S. The arrests uncovered four Chinese individuals who allegedly helped China's communist regime commit forced abortions and sterilizations. Since 2003, ICE has arrested more than 415 individuals for human rights-related violations. U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper visiting the United Kingdom today, speaking at the Royal United Services Institute, cautioning European allies against dependence on Russia and China.
Esper, in his first major speech, calling for a greater European focus on threats from China and Russia.
It is increasingly clear that Russia and China want to disrupt the international order by gaining a veto over other nations' economic, diplomatic, and security decisions.
There are a growing number of flashpoints in the U.S.-China relationship, which include an escalating trade war, American sanctions on China's military, and the U.S. relationship with Taiwan, which Beijing considers a renegade province. Taking his message to London, Esper described concerns about China, from the way it uses its economic power to its widespread technology theft.
The more dependent a country becomes on Chinese investment and trade, the more susceptible they are to coercion and retribution when they act outside of Beijing's wishes. The political and economic leverage China is gaining by carrying out this strategy has begun eroding the sovereignty of many nations.
Esper said he would discuss Huawei with his British counterpart later on Friday. He also highlighted the risks posed by Russia from a potential incursion into a neighboring country to its actions in Syria. Last year, the U.S. military put countering China and Russia at the center of a new national defense strategy, the latest sign of shifting priorities after years of focusing on the fight against Islamist militants. NTD News.
The U.S. is giving more aid to Venezuelans who have fled their country due to the economic crisis created by Nicolas Maduro's socialist regime. U.S. officials announced $120 million in additional funding for emergency food and health assistance. Ivanka Trump joined the Administrator for International Development, Mark Green, and Deputy Secretary of State John Sullivan in Colombia for the announcement. The money will go toward Venezuelan refugees living in Colombia, Ecuador, Brazil, and other countries in the region. Some 4.3 million Venezuelans have fled their country as its economy continues to spiral out of control. According to the State Department, 94% of households there were living in poverty last year. In an early morning tweet today, President Trump quoted a CNBC host as saying that China needs to make a trade deal more than the United States does because of the health of its economy. NTD's Kitty Wong spoke to China experts and economists about who has the upper hand in U.S.-China trade negotiations.
Trump has accused China of delaying trade talks in hopes that he will lose the election in 2020. He thinks China wants to deal with someone who is more willing to compromise.
China is very adept on some of the things that anything they would not like to accept. Donald Trump got the lesson and experience, so he would try hard to push Chinese side to accept. If not, then the tariff retaliation would be worse.
The two countries traded tariffs on each other's goods in quick succession last month. Earlier this week, the U.S. announced trade talks with China are set to resume in October. At the same time, Trump warned China that if it continued to delay and he wins in 2020, he will drive an even harder bargain. Ye Liangxia says that even if Trump loses in 2020, he doesn't think China will get off easy.
I think the Congress, business and academics, they all think China is trying to challenge the existing order of the world. They try to change the rules and orders of the world. That's something that they cannot allow to do.
China's central bank announced on Friday it is decreasing the amount of cash that banks must hold in reserve, an effort to aid its struggling economy. Chinese are also having trouble paying their debt. According to the data from one of China's biggest rating firms, private bond defaults reached $4.5 billion through August. This is a record high and exceeds the $3.8 billion for 2017 and 2018 combined.
The debt level of Chinese companies continue to rise pretty rapidly, which means that many firms are now trapped in the scissors between declining per unit revenue and high debt and all the interest payments that you have to pay when you have high debt.
Trump has predicted that China's economy will crumble if the two countries don't reach a trade deal by 2020. Steve Moore of the Heritage Foundation agrees and says China's economy could implode if a trade deal isn't made soon.
If this doesn't get resolved in the next year, this could drive China into its first recession in 30 years.
Reporting by Kitty Wong, NTD News.
A harrowing story. That's how an official with the National Transportation Safety Board describes Monday's fatal dive boat fire in California.
The fire that broke out on the Concepcion dive boat this Labor Day swallowed most of the vessel within minutes.
We are not ruling out any possible ignition sources. We are focused on everything.
34 people died in the blaze.
Our life trajectories are going to be different now, and it's just going to unfold, and we're going to be there for each other.
Investigators believe the raging fire blocked the victims from escape routes.
The crew that did jump down reported that they had went to the double doors of the galley to try to get in, to get to the passengers, but it was engulfed in flames at that time.
Five crew members, including the captain, were the only survivors on board. Truth Aquatics, the owner of the dive boat, has filed a complaint that could allow it to avoid or at least limit liability for the fire. The complaint states that the fire was not caused or contributed to by any negligence, fault, or knowledge on part of Truth Aquatics.
We're also saddened. You know, the crew is dealing with it, and of course our family, we're dealing with it, of this terrible loss.
The company has halted its operations for the next few weeks out of respect for those who lost loved ones in the fire.
And in Hong Kong, citizens continue to protest after the extradition bill's withdrawal is announced, and several people missing after police attack civilians inside a train station. NTD reporter Jeremy Sandberg is in Hong Kong to hear the concerns surrounding the protests.
The extradition bill that would allow individuals to be sent to mainland China for trial drew widespread concern that the law would be abused by the Chinese communist regime to silence and punish any of its dissidents or critics. Although Hong Kong's leader announced the withdrawal of the bill on Wednesday, people are unsatisfied and want all five demands answered. Many protesters cover their faces and are reluctant to give their full names to prevent retaliation from the Hong Kong government and the Chinese communist regime.
We can see that Carrie Lam is not serving us. She's either serving Beijing or either serving Washington, D.C. or just covering some murderous police force. Either in three cases, she doesn't care about us. And this is unforgivable. We are raised in a civil society.
The five demands are complete withdrawal of the bill, an independent inquiry into police actions, previous characterizations of protesters as rioters to be taken back, amnesty for those arrested during the protests, and free elections.
Universal suffrage, one man, one vote, is an ultimate trust between, a mutual ultimate trust between the government and the people. The government believes that we will use our best judgment to decide a future, and we decide that our self-elected officials will act as our basic interest. Totalitarian states do not share this kind of mutual trust between the people and the government.
Last week, police attacked citizens in the Prince Edward MTR station using batons and pepper spray. Police were seen beating suspected protesters, leaving several bloodied. Citizens suspect that some of the victims of the attack could be dead.
I do suspect somebody have died here, but I hope not.
We have 10 people injured, serious injured, but we just have 7 people sent to the hospital. So we want to know where are the 3 people.
Citizens gathered at Prince Edward train station to demand the video footage from the cameras before they are erased, which is usually done after 7 days. Crowds left flowers, burned incense and candles, and left offerings for the victims.
MTR is hiding the truth. They don't want to disclose the footage of the CCTV to the public. But today we are fighting for the truth.
Blood, sweat, and tear gas are starting to define the protest here. The level of violence between the police and protesters has escalated over the last few months, and citizens are becoming more adamant about the need for an independent inquiry into the police force. On news of the extradition bill being withdrawn, protesters say their demonstrations will continue until their five demands are met. Jeremy Sandberg, NTD News, Hong Kong.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel, meeting with China's premier in Beijing today, says the rights and freedoms of people in Hong Kong must be guaranteed.
During a joint news conference, Merkel raised the question of Hong Kong with China's premier, Li Keqiang, saying a peaceful solution was needed.
I pointed out that these rights and freedoms must of course be guaranteed. In the current situation, everything must be given to avoid violence, and the solution can only be carried out in a political way, that is to say, through dialogue.
Li responded to Merkel, saying that Beijing supported the policy that Hong Kong people govern Hong Kong people. This following ongoing unrest in Hong Kong, despite Chief Executive Carrie Lam's formal withdrawal of a controversial extradition bill. Several activists and pro-democracy groups say they will not give up on their demands, and more rallies are planned for the weekend. NTD News.
Now to the UK, where Prime Minister Boris Johnson is renewing his push for an early general election. Meanwhile, his brother Joe Johnson has quit as a junior minister, citing a conflict between family loyalty and national interest. NTD's Jane Werrell reports from London.
Brexit continues to grip the UK Parliament. The next general election is scheduled for May 2022, but Johnson says he wants an early election on October the 15th, before the Brexit deadline, which is October the 31st. He's hoping that voters will give him a majority in Parliament, backing his stance on Brexit.
I don't want an election at all. I don't want an election at all, but frankly, I cannot see any other way.
British lawmakers rejected Johnson's plans for an early general election on Wednesday, but the Leader of the House confirmed there'll be another vote for it on Monday. By Monday, legislation that would block a no-deal Brexit and is backed by the majority of lawmakers is expected to pass. Meanwhile, Boris Johnson's brother has quit as a junior cabinet member and Conservative lawmaker, citing unresolvable tension between family loyalty and the national interest.
It's time to move on, and I've got to get to work. Sorry, I beg your pardon.
21 Conservative lawmakers, including two former cabinet members and Churchill's grandson, were banned from the Conservative Party for voting against Johnson.
I'm truly very sad that it should end in this way.
It's been a challenging week for Johnson, who says he'll deliver Brexit, do or die. The general public is split over the Brexit vote, which happened over 3 years ago. The nation voted to leave the EU 52% to 48%, at a high turnout of 72%.
But so far as those people who participated 3 years ago, they ain't changed their minds, and they're now deeply attached to two options that are very much very different from each other. And therefore finding a compromise on this issue has proven extremely difficult.
He said some who didn't vote during the referendum may slant more towards remaining in the EU.
Public opinion may well be split along Brexit lines rather than traditional party lines. We'll find out if there's a general election. Reporting from London, Jane Werrell, NTD News.
French ministers are calling on companies to get ready for Brexit ahead of the October 31st deadline.
French junior ministers met with business associations in Paris on Tuesday to warn that French companies operating in the UK need to be ready ahead of Britain's possible exit from the EU on October 31st. This includes the scenario in which the UK leaves without a deal in place. The companies involved in importing from and exporting to the UK are also facing challenges, including uncertainty about customs regulations.
Among all French businesses concerned by Brexit, not all are prepared to the same level. For example, a year ago, almost all banks had a plan B in case a hard Brexit happens. They have finalized changes this year to their business structure and client operation. Whereas small businesses that employ less than 250 people are struggling to adapt their human and IT resources.
In the event that negotiations between the EU and the UK break down, a hard Brexit would also mean that British companies would no longer have to comply with European standards. But France's European Affairs Minister, Amélie de Montchalin, said a no-deal Brexit won't be the end of the world, and the UK will remain France's closest neighbor to the north.
The European Union today expressed its great concern about Iran further reducing its nuclear commitments. In a letter sent to EU Foreign Policy Chief Federic Mogherini, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said Iran would be further reducing its commitments under a 2015 nuclear deal.
We note with great concern the announcement made by Iran in the letter that you refer to and also publicly regarding a further reduction of its commitments under the JCPOA, so the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, also known as the Iran nuclear deal.
Under the 2015 deal, Iran is allowed limited research and development on advanced centrifuges, which accelerate the production of fissile material that can be used to make a nuclear bomb. On Wednesday, Iran said it would begin developing centrifuges to speed up the enrichment of uranium, the third step in scaling down its commitments in the nuclear deal. Iran threatened to take the step if Europe failed to provide a solution by Friday to allow Iran to sell its oil abroad following the U.S.'s withdrawal and sanctions. President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the deal last year, arguing it did not go far enough, and reimposed sanctions that have slashed Iran's crude oil sales by more than 80%. Following Iran's demands, the EU is developing a trade mechanism, the INSTEX, that aims at bartering humanitarian goods and food with Iran without using the U.S. dollar currency.
Samsung just launched its first foldable smartphone, the Galaxy Fold, in South Korea today.
Shoppers eager to try out the new phone were seen queuing up at Samsung's official store in central Seoul. The perks of the Galaxy Fold include showing up to three apps simultaneously on the device's main screen, and when it's closed, the display is replicated on an external screen. The feature is known as app continuity. An iPhone fan was so impressed with the new functions, he said he might consider switching.
Especially this kind of phone has never been presented before. Considering these functions, I may purchase Samsung's phone.
While a Galaxy Note series owner said some of his favorite functions have now been taken away.
It's good that we can use a bigger or smaller screen, and any size we want according to the situation. But as a user of the Galaxy Note series, it is a pity that Galaxy Fold doesn't have an electronic pen.
The Galaxy Fold is priced at just shy of $2,000.
Toronto International Film Festival opened last night with the world premiere of The Personal History of David Copperfield, based on the classic novel.
Writer, director, and producer Armando Iannucci says though the novel is set in the Victorian era, the film is relatable for people today.
Well, I hope, although it's set, you know, in the past, it should feel like the present. And that's how I asked the performers, the cast, to perform it. That's how I asked the production to make it. For these people in it, it's today.
Starring a mostly British cast, this semi-autobiographical tale is set in the 1840s and chronicles the life of David Copperfield in the classic novel of the same name by Charles Dickens. Actor Dev Patel plays Copperfield, who is sent away by his stepfather as a boy after his mother dies, but manages to triumph over incredible adversities. From his unhappy childhood to discovering his gift as a storyteller and writer, Copperfield's journey is by turns hilarious and tragic, but always full of life, color, and humanity.
It's an absolute coming-of-age story at its heart, and it's only when he owns himself and owns where he came from that he gets his greatest success, and it goes into his work. And I think that's a great thing to put out.
The Personal History of David Copperfield is screening at the Toronto International Film Festival until Saturday. Reporting by Arik Rusik, NTD News, Toronto.
Feel free to take a break from screens today and pick up a novel, because it's National Read a Book Day. The day is observed each year on September 6th. Reading can reduce stress and improve your memory and concentration. So to celebrate, pull your favorite book off the shelf and curl up with it, or find a classic to read with your kids. If you're in the mood for something new, visit your local library or bookstore. The point of this special day is to remember how nice it can be to get away from all the technology that surrounds us and read a book. And that's all for today's NTD Midday News. Join us again this evening. I'm Tiffany Meyer.